ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Preparations are concealed, not published. The stakes are buried, not headlined. Its percentages are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives. Oblivious.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I received your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country. The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Setting a shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there.
Well, greetings, folks. Clint Richardson stepping in for Shali today. He might be joining us in the second hour. We might get a surprise visit from Shali. We're not sure yet. But joining me today will be Mr. Patrick Jordan. We're going to be talking about, lots of stuff. Bugs. Parasites and other gruesome tales of the human condition. But you know what? I got to start off today with a little bit of politics because I just don't understand what do people think is happening right now. one of my favorite quotes that I've collected over the years really says it all. It says the ultimate ownership of all property is in the state. Individual so-called ownership is only by virtue of government, i.e. law, amounting to mere user, or those familiar with usufruct is the actually correct word. And user, that's you, that's me, that's any tenant, any public citizenship, all you people who think you own your home and own title to your car and own this and own that. The user must be in accordance with the law and subordinate to the necessities of the state. Ultimate ownership of all property is in the state. Individual so-called ownership is only by virtue of government. And this is one of the points I was trying to make last week at that ending of our show, that hey, no matter what you do, you are going to be beholden to some power structure, some state, or as I call it, some God, because God just means magistrate, which is anything from king to president to mayor to judge. All right. Now, that, by the way, is Senate document number 4373, D, Congress first session. A little thing called Contracts Payable in Gold by George Cyrus Thorpe, and of course submitted to the Senate, so it's official record, April 17th, 1933. Lots of interesting shit happened in 1933, but most importantly, what happened in 1933 was the issuance by Congress of the ability for the president, both the president and the treasury, from the Independent Treasury Act, to basically be dictators. And that's what we're seeing with Trump. I warned people that the only issue that should be talking about, the only issue that anybody should have been calling their senators and calling their congressmen, which is ridiculous, but the only thing that you should be doing is saying, hey, Congress, take back responsibility for yourselves. Stop allowing the president to have this executive order power. Why do I say that Congress is responsible? You see, we think that the president can just do anything. That's because we've been raised in an era where we've known nothing else. And I think it's pretty pathetic. What did I say? So the only issue on the table is the fact that the president has executive order authority, executive orders and presidential directives. Now, Congressman Patman in the 73rd Congress also stated that it will, as far as the money goes in the Congress, under the new public laws of 1933, the Banking Act, the gold standard, all that stuff, the money will be worth 100 cents on the dollar because it is backed by the credit of the nation. That's you, of course. You are the live stock of the nation. You're the peopled goy. It will represent a mortgage on all the homes and other property of all the people in the nation. That is a description of the money of the United States. Remember, the ultimate ownership of all properties in the state. Now, that gives us a little background into the mentality of this Congress and this nation, which is not as lovely as we might think. And so this brings us to 1933, when the Congressional Act of March 9th, 1933, Title I, Section 1, and this is the most important the most important part of this whole thing is right here. All right, the actions. This is what Congress says about the president and the Secretary of the Treasury. This is why the Federal Reserve seems to be always going rogue. Why we're led to believe that Congress has its hands tied. It's all a bunch of bullshit. You see, they lie to you and they say, oh yeah, we can't do anything. That darn Federal Reserve or that president. Oh, there he goes again with his executive orders and presidential directives. We just can't do a darn thing about it. Here's what Congress did. And here's what Congress can take back at any time. This is why I said it should have been the number one subject. If there was any real debate, this should have been it. Congressional Act of March 9th, 1933, Title I, Section 1, says that the actions, regulations, rules, licenses, orders, as in executive orders, and proclamations heretofore or hereafter taken, promulgated, made, or issued by the President of the United States or the Secretary of Treasury, since March the 4th, 1933, pursuant to the authority conferred by Subdivision B of Section 5 of the Act of October 6, 1917, as amended, are hereby approved and confirmed. The actions, regulations, licenses, executive orders, and proclamations, that everything that the President and the Secretary of Treasury does from now on are hereby approved and confirmed. Did you get that? Imagine if you were given a dictatorial seat in a dictatorial government. What would the rules say? It would say, okay, you're a dictator, and therefore the actions, regulations, rules, licenses, orders, and proclamations heretofore taken are obviously approved and confirmed by the quote-unquote people because you're a fucking dictator. Well, that's exactly what Congress did with the office of president. And you see, you gotta understand, it's not the man. It's the big lie in the truth movement. The big lie is that man can be sovereign. And it took me a long time to really understand this bullshit about man being king and man being sovereign. You know what? If you do a little research, you're gonna find out that the office of Pope belongs to the Holy See, to the corporation that is the Vatican. You're going to find out that the the king and the queen is property of the crown. Just because some man fills it, male or female, doesn't mean that that man is sovereign. The crown, the fiction, is sovereign. There is no sovereignty among men, because sovereignty implies that you may rule over others. The only way to do that is, well, to have subjects. And I don't think any man in their right mind who truly understood what the fuck was going on would actually volunteer to be a subject. My personal opinion, I look at England and I cringe every time they go crazy about their stuff. But let me just end this a little tirade by so that you understand, so that you understand why you have no idea that you're in a dictatorial situation, because of course nobody tells you this, they certainly don't talk about this, and when Trump or Obama or anybody else, Bush, issues executive orders, or when the Secretary of Treasury issues executive orders and allows the Fed to do whatever the hell it wants, well, remember that that's Congress, and Congress can stop this at any time. They don't want to. They're not in competition. That's a big lie, too. There is no right and there is no left, as Reagan even stated. There's either up or down. There's either freedom or not. There's either, you know, there's a lot of crap going on. And so Congress got together in 1971. Excuse me, that's not right. Not 1971. They got together and they did the Senate report. 93-549, they collected together and they said, huh, you know, we've allowed these guys to these presidents through the office, the property of government, these men have gotten their presidential suites and they've, you know, been allowed to do these basically be dictators this whole time, starting with Roosevelt and truly starting with Lincoln, because the Civil War was not a declared war. It was actually couldn't be declared because the South didn't exist. If it did exist, then it would fall under all these conventions and war crimes. So they never acknowledged that the South existed because they were Confederates, right? Confederacy and conspiracy are the same word, you dumbasses. So, we have lived our lives in our generation, and, you know, at this point, most people are dead that ever lived before this Great Depression, because, you know, this was 1933. Here's what the committee that formed that Senate document said. And I know I've read this before, but I really want to get this through your heads, folks. This is the power that Trump has. And not Trump, but the President of the United States, no matter who it is, no matter what you do, the President will always have this power until Congress actually changes it. Congress does this with so many things that it pretends that it has no power, but in fact it has all the power. It can stump Trump in 2 seconds if it wanted to by just changing and getting rid of this. But here's what they said about their powers of national emergency. The power to declare a national emergency equals the power to fight a war, an internal war, if you will, against that emergency, not against the nation, not against the people, not against anything tangible, but against the emergency. The war on the flu, the war on drugs, the war on this, the war on that, the war on terrorism. By the war on terrorism, you can basically attack any country you want to, because, hey, terrorists, you know, they're everywhere. Those little fuckers, they're like little roaches, man. How do you stomp them out? It's all a lie. Since March the 9th, this is Congress speaking, since March the 9th, 1933, the United States has been in a state of declared national emergency. In fact, there are now in effect 4 presidentially proclaimed states of national emergency. In addition, this is in the 70s, in addition to the national emergency declared by President Roosevelt in 1933, which brought on the New Deal and all that crap, We still had one with Korea, et cetera, et cetera. These proclamations, which, of course, is what Bush used after 9/11 to I should say Congress used through the president to do all that crap. These proclamations give force to 470 provisions of federal law. These hundreds of statutes delegate to the president extraordinary powers, presidential directives, and presidential executive orders, ordinarily exercised only by Congress, which affect the lives of American citizens in a host of all-encompassing manners. This vast range of powers, taken together, confer enough authority to rule the country without reference to normal constitutional processes. All right, now get that through your head, all you fucking idiots who say you're constitutionalists. If you do not know that since you were born, you've been under the state of national emergency, under a state of dictatorship, and that the Constitution, for all intents and purposes, means absolutely nothing when an emergency is declared, and that executive orders overrule anything. There is no Constitution. It doesn't affect you in the first place because you're a product of the nation. You're not the product that made the nation. You're not the private people. So I can't get that. You know, I could spend half an hour going through that. Under the powers delegated by these statutes, the president may seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad. This is why we've not had a declared war. Why would Congress declare a war when they can just call up the president and say, hey, let's go to Iraq, right? Got to fill my legacy. They didn't do anything to us, but let's go there and get some oil. Right, let's go to Afghanistan and get some poppies. Yeah. Assign military forces abroad. No war, but we see we have a war on drugs and a war on, sanctions? We had a war on oil, a war on terror, a war on this, a war on communism. You can institute martial law. And guess what, folks? If martial law can be instituted, that really means that you're already under it. It's just not being enforced in any way militarily. They call it what we're under, military rule, which turns into martial law if it needs to. And that, you know, you can read the Libra Code to understand why we're under military rule, why the presence of a military base in any state equals martial law, the marshals of law. President can seize and control all transportation and communication, can regulate the operation of private enterprise, can restrict your travel, which we just saw with the last executive order restricting travel to all foreigners, and in a plethora of particular ways, control the lives of all American citizens. That's what the president can do, thanks to Congress. A majority of the people of the United States have lived all their lives under emergency rule for 40 years, and now for, 80 years, freedoms and governmental procedures guaranteed by the Constitution. Well, how can it be guaranteed if, you know, I mean, what a stupid thing to say. In varying degrees, those freedoms and governmental procedures guaranteed by the Constitution in varying degrees have been abridged by laws brought into force by states of national emergency, and in the United States, actions taken by the government in times of great crisis have, from at least the Civil War, in important ways shaped the present phenomenon of a permanent state of national emergency. How does the president obtain and continue in his dictatorship allowed by Congress, fully understood that Congress could end it at any time, but they don't, by keeping some national emergency? Even though we're not at war with Vietnam, we still have, or Korea, we still have the national emergencies regarding it. And so Congress got together in that Senate Report 93-549. I highly recommend you read it. And, you know, basically decided, let's go ahead and keep it. We're doing so well with this thing, we can fucking pirate any fucking nation or any country we want that can't fight back, because, you know, we don't ever attack any of the first world nations. That would be improper. They might fight back. So let's pirate the third world. Let's just go kick the ass of everybody out there. Congress can just sit back and pretend like their hands are tied and, you know, everything's fine. Congressman James M. Beck, speaking from the Congressional Record in 1933, lots of people were opposed to this. He was one of them. He said, "This vast range of powers taken together confer enough authority to rule the country without reference to normal constitutional processes." When you go to Black's Law or any place, you're going to find the national emergency defined, or a national emergency, is defined as a state of national crisis, a situation demanding immediate and extraordinary national or federal action. And in Brown versus Bernstein, a court case in D.C., says Congress has made little or no distinction between a state of national emergency and a state of war. Now, again, when I declare, as president, in that property, that office, that sovereignty, when I declare a state of emergency, I am declaring, for all intents and purposes, a state of war against that emergency, whether it's drugs or terrorism or Christianity or love or Islam, whatever it is. Whatever it is, that's what I can do. What is a dictator? Dictator is a magistrate invested with ultimate power, unlimited power, and created in times of national distress and peril. Among the Romans, he continued in office for 6 months only and had unlimited power and authority over both the property and lives of the citizens, one in whom supreme authority in any line is invested, one who rules as dictator, and one who prescribes for others authoritatively. Wow, that sounds familiar. Gee, everything goes back to Rome. What a surprise. Of course, we discussed what we didn't say last week we meant to, was that inauguration is another word that goes back to that goes back to Rome, naturally. Let's see if I can pull it up real quick here. Inauguration. Oh, that's not the right one. Oh, well, it comes from Rome. The actual term and the reason it's called an inauguration is because we put augurs, or in Rome, there were augurs who took office and ruled, very similar to the Congress, current Congress and president under emergency rule. So, what do we have? We have a dictator. Now, what is, you know, if we were to say what a dictator is, it's someone who puts words on paper or who speaks words and they become law. That's really all a dictator is. So, is Trump a dictator? Absolutely. Was Bush, was Obama a dictator? Absolutely. Were they there in that position with the full support and pretended opposition of Congress? Absolutely. On that note, hopefully you guys understand the situation you're in, because you have no real rights. You have no constitutional protections. You have nothing. And at any time, I mean, you can be renditioned. There is nothing. There is nothing in support of your so-called freedom, your American exceptionalism, as long as this national emergency situation is in place. On that note, hopefully Patrick Jordan is with me. I went a little too longer than I expected, but hey, it's important. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
How do? Hello, everybody.
Patrick, man, I gotta tell you, man, I'm becoming more deeply concerned as we as we head into what I don't know what to call it. You know, I don't think we can call it the apocalypse. because the apocalypse would actually be the revelation of knowledge, right? That's why I call my book post-apocalyptic. You're not gonna get it until knowledge actually comes your way, and that knowledge is gonna have to be, holy shit, they're cloning, and it's legal. Holy shit, they're creating new life, and it's legal. Holy crap. That life is now manning robots and guns. Holy crap. What the fuck? I can now print new life through companies. I just have to give them my DNA sequence. Holy crap. They're connecting circuitry to skin and bone and brain and creating horrible chimeric monsters everywhere. Holy crap. And I think that's going to come with a little bit of, I don't know if anger is the right word, but a little bit of retribution, a little bit of, okay, we cannot allow this to happen. We must turn over the tables of these scientists, these money changers, these life changers. We must destroy this. I'm very frightened for our future right now. And maybe that sounds crazy to people, because people aren't paying attention, because people aren't looking into this CRISPR technology, all these different things that are available now to just the average layman, just to the average, you know, villain in a cave. I'm shocked at what is possible now, and more than that, that people are actually somehow being driven. And that's what I want to talk about. What's driving them? What's driving people to make this type of technology, to support it, to love it, to go out of their way to create it, to get it legalized, to get it licensed? You know, of course, license means a direct violation of the natural law. It's the only reason you need a license, to break the law. So what the fuck's driving these people, Patrick? I know you have your theories.
Okay, we have to go back. Can you, in the document that you open the show with, can you just do an edit find and find the word necessary? You used it only once in what you were reading. I want to go back to that word and get it in context.
Well, yeah, give me 2 seconds here.
Yeah.
I do understand that, you know, the law of necessity as far as government goes is defined as, basically the law. So the law of necessity means there is no law.
Work of art, man.
It's brilliant. So, and truly, it's a true statement. You know, in nature, if I'm starving,
yeah,
and I see someone has way, you know, way more food than they can possibly, the law of necessity says I'm going to steal. I'm sorry, it's either that or die. So there is certainly in nature, of course, there is a law of necessity, which means there is no law. Let's see. I don't see it under that. Necessity? Where is it?
If you're doing edit find, just put an N-E-C-E-S and let it just find the word, because I don't know if it was necessary or necessity. But it's critical.
So the user must be in accordance with law and subordinate with the necessities of the state.
Necessities of the state. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, in context, Clint, you know, my mind was burning, you know, because I take notes through all the shows that we do. My mind was burning with this idea because, like you, I knew what that word meant, the necessity of the state, which means exactly, because you expounded on that in detail. What you had said in your entire talk was there was no law, because they had declared war, and in an emergency, what you had said later, like at the very end of your talk, was they were referring to laws in force. Well, force is the action of one thing on another to compel or kill it in order to create an action. And so this is it's the hand drawing the hand, you know, that Escher drawing that you put on We Are the People blog that you have. It's just a fucking dog chasing its tail. And so when you break it down to what some friends of mine always called the irreducible prime numbers, one times itself, no other factors. We're at war, and that's the point that I wanted to make. You don't have property because it was mortgaged. Why? For the war. You pay taxes. Why? Not for the privileges of living in a free country, because taxes are tribute to the occupiers. It's in Deuteronomy 22, I think. It's tribute. You're paying those that imprison you. It's like a somebody that's in jail making license plates. Oh, isn't that funny?
Well, we can certainly see where the Bible, absolutely tells you, that Mark 10:42, and says, Jesus says to them, you know that they which are accounted to rule over the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and their great ones exercise authority upon them. And then, of course, it tells you not to be among, not to let them be among you, and the chiefest among you should be the servant of all. So it's telling you to get the fuck out from under these people that you're talking about. Luke 22, it says, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and they that exercise authority upon them are called benefactors. So, who are the benefactors? Well, it's not us, as we've been led to believe, right? The benefactors of the trust are the people who set it up, not the people who are common goyim or Gentiles. It's very clear that that's the case. What does it say? It says, but ye shall not be so. He that is chief, should serve. And I appoint you a kingdom as my father appointed to me. So the point is, again, get the hell out from underneath these benefactors, these people who, what does it say? What does it say earlier? It says, he who is surety for another will surely smart for it. Well, that means smart means be put in pain. It means, like you said, pay tribute to your masters. And how is it that we're under these people? How is it that this all happens? You got to remember, even though what I just read seems crazy and seems like, we're all prisoners of war. Remember, it's voluntary. No matter how much violence can be threatened, no matter what people can make you believe, this is all voluntary. City of Dallas versus Mitchell says the rights of the individuals are restricted only to the extent that they have been voluntarily surrendered by citizenship to the agencies of government. Whatever you think your rights are, really depends on which law you follow. If you follow the law of God, the natural law, then your rights come and are unlimited from nature, from God. If you're following the state, you believe in the president, you believe that you're a citizen of the United States, and that's the God you follow, which is, this strange God, the people, that doesn't actually exist. There is no actual the people. Why? Because it's a fucking plural. There is no people. I'm not a people. Right? So, you know, this sort of deity has been set up called the people that we are paying tribute to, and that of course gets divided amongst the individuals and amongst the government. And they're the benefactors. They're the ones receiving the tribute. They're the ones, not us. Not us. We are not the benefactors. We're the fucking slave race. The Goyim. Okay,
let's do this from my perspective, which is always biology. A tapeworm lives inside of you, sucks your life, and eats your food, and it is the benefactor. Now, because, and this is the reason, Clint, that I had to bring necessity into it, and if I can, I want to read from Black's Second, the definition of necessity. If that is true, then if you know you have a tapeworm, what do? In modern medicine and in folk medicine, you poison the motherfucker. You kill it. You get it out of your body. And the difference is, this is the bifurcation in people's minds where they can't come to terms with what you're saying. They think, okay, Clint, you're telling us nice stuff and we're learning a whole bunch about the way the world is, but it's abstract. No, it isn't, because you just said the words. These abdications to outside authority are because you choose to, because the other choice is, and I'm going to say it, to kill the motherfuckers. But that comes with consequence. Now, if you kill a tapeworm and you do it successfully, there is not like a whole hive of tapeworms that's going to come to your house and say, hey, you killed that tapeworm without a license.
Excuse me, sir. We're the tapeworm police, and we have reports of violence against other tapeworms.
There's no court for tapeworms. You kill the motherfucker, and it's over. But in this situation, it's not over, because we're dealing with human beings that are, I'm going to say it, infected with something else.
Well, and this can be a true statement. You know, let's go to the figurative first, though. Because figuratively, if I want to kill, let's just say I want to kill my whatever office I can name.
Sure.
Right? What am I really killing? Figuratively, I'm only killing the badge. I'm killing the name, the flattering title, the thing that gives that man his perceived but false authority and power. I'm not killing a man. I'm not talking about murdering a man. I'm talking about killing, figuratively, an office. Right? That's a big difference between... Now, inversely, if we're talking about, you know, the true nature, which we've certainly covered before, about brain parasites, and, you know, you can just type in, for instance, brain parasite causes human behavior to change, right, in your search engine, you're going to find all kinds of information out there about many different brain parasites that are known to affect human behavior. Some make us stupid, some alter our behavior and get us sexually attracted to stupid behavior, excitement, that kind of thing, stuff that'll kill us. There's all kinds of parasites that affect our brain. Rabies is also one of those that affect our behavior. So, you know, there's nothing unprecedented about this. But see, here's my problem, Patrick. Like the legal system, like the misconception, the delusion that these things just exist, that they're out there, not because we believe they're out there, but because they've always been that way somehow, right?
Right.
You know, that they're not fiction, they're reality. No, they're fiction. The problem is, in my opinion, the identification process. I went to my doctor long ago after being in the airlines and traveling, you know, for free all over the damn world, 130 countries. You know what? I said, doctor, I'm fairly sure I have parasites because my bowels have been going crazy. My, you know, I haven't had a regular shit in 20 years, right? So I'm like, I've got to have some kind of parasite. It's affecting me in different ways. And he said, well, see, the problem is, we only know there's over 200 parasites, and we only know how to detect about 10 of them.
Right.
We only actually have a test for 10 of those parasites. So you can have any form of parasite, all these 200 different parasites that do different things. So I'm just going to give you a flagyl and try to knock out whatever it is. I don't know why I'm giving you medicine. I can't verify that you have a parasite, and the test came back negative. But hey, let's treat you as if you do have a parasite. Just knock the hell out of you. Destroy your health with some flagyl, right? Flagyl, like, being the last ditch thing you're supposed to use. And on pets, by the way. So I think the real problem here, Patrick, is being able to identify the parasite, because a lot of people obviously are fucking in love with Obama and in love with Trump and in love with Congress and in love with that American way, having no idea what a parasite it is.
That just crosses so many, like, I'm always at a loss for the adjectives. It just crosses over the figurative to the literal. Because if you put a guy in a cop suit and he tasers a granny, would he do that if he wasn't in a cop suit? So what was it about the costume, the uniform, that makes a man do things that are completely against all reason and sanity? And that is an individual thing, because if there was a community that goes, hey, you know, were you going to a fancy dress party, you could laugh him into, like, embarrassment. But because the collective illusion, the delusion, the hysteria is, oh my God, he's a cop. And everybody then, and this is why I say capitulation, abdication of personal authority. He becomes a cop because you gave up your authority.
Well, let me take some time, Patrick, if you don't mind, and I will explain this to a T.
Awesome.
I will tell you exactly what's happening, because why? Oh, not because I'm a smart guy. But because in 1974, Stanley Milgram summarized his experiments in Harper's Magazine.
Oh, this is awesome.
And it's entitled The Perils of Obedience. Now, Stanley Milgram, of course, was the creator of the Milgram experiments, which tested authority. The test figure was actually the authority figure, and the authority figure thought the patient was a test subject, but in fact he was testing people's ability,
right,
to be what he called under the agentic relationship. In other words, when an authority figure tells you to do something, how far will you go, even when you think someone is dying from your from pressing a button and electrocuting them, is basically what he was doing. And he was testing to see how far people would go. And the results of experiment literally rocked the entire scientific community, and they tried to ban anyone from seeing it, because, I mean, this really proved that we are some seriously asshole people. I mean, literally, that we are suffering from a major agentic problem. Now, we've talked about agency. It's the same thing. Attorney, right?
Awesome.
The legal and philosophic aspects of obedience are of enormous importance, but they say very little about how most people behave in concrete situations. I set up a simple experiment at Yale University to test how much pain an ordinary citizen would inflict on another person simply because he was ordered by an experimental science, ordered to by an experimental scientist. Stark authority was pitted against the subjects, the participants' strongest moral imperatives against hurting others, and with the subjects or participants' ears ringing with the screams of the victims, authority won more often than not. The extreme willingness of adults to go to almost any lengths on the command of an authority figure constitutes the chief finding of the study, and the fact most urgently demanding explanation. Ordinary people simply doing their jobs and without any particular hostility on their part can become agents in a terrible, destructive process. Moreover, even when the destructive effects of their work become patently clear and they are asked to carry out actions incompatible with fundamental standards of morality, relatively few people have the resources needed to resist authority. Now, that's Stanley Milgram, straight from the man. Let me read one other from the American Psychologist.
Clint, was that first one in your book?
Yeah, this is right out of my book, yeah.
Fucking awesome, man.
American Psychologist 45. Well, you have to know what it means to be in this agentic, you know, right. in agency, what right. it causes you to do and what it causes you to believe, and really what it causes you to ask. What is legal? What am I licensed to do? Oh, I'm a soldier now, so I can kill the gooks? But wait a minute, are we in a lawful war? Oh, no war has ever been declared. We're just having you go over there and kill people and drop napalm on them because we're Monsanto, really, and we're just testing our chemicals, right? A cognitive reinterpretation of Stanley Milgram's observation on obedience and authority, an American Psychologist, in 1990. This was written. The first... Milgram elaborated two theories that were summarized in this publication. The first is the theory of conformism, based on Solomon Ash conformity experiments, describing the fundamental relationship between the group of reference and the individual person, a subject who has neither ability nor expertise to make decisions, especially in a crisis, will leave decision-making to the group and its hierarchy. The group is the person's behavioral model. The second is that the agentic state theory, remember, we're always talking about agency around here, wherein, per Stanley Milgram, the essence of obedience consists in the fact that a person comes to view themselves as the instrument for carrying out another person's wishes, and they therefore no longer see themselves as responsible for their own actions. Once this critical shift of viewpoint has occurred in the person, all of the essential features of obedience follow. Now you ask, what makes, you know, these police officers do what they do, taser granny and all that? Well, you see, there's a psychological war going on with all of these particular types of agents, right? This is why I love the notion that everybody is an agent. Everybody is a potential agent out there, right? Everybody can turn on you if they feel like you're threatening the hand that feeds them, right? Families can be torn apart. So, you know, what are we learning here? That once you get a uniform, you get a badge, you get a license to do something, it triggers something in the mind of most people. And most people will use that to justify their actions as someone else's. So I'm a cop, but I'm not me. I'm Officer Bob. And Officer Bob is the state. Right? It's like you lose something. Something goes away. And I'm sure that everybody out there has had some form of authority in their lifetime and can go back to that moment. Yeah, I was an assistant manager and I told my 7-Eleven employees, you know, we need more Twix. Whatever it is, you ordered someone else to do something instead of doing it yourself. Whatever, you have that power, that agentic power that makes you believe that you're something you're not. This is why the Bible, of course, says never believe that you are anything. You are no thing. You are no person, place, or thing. Do not accept flattering titles. Do not accept marks, blemishes, badges, marks, numbers, anything. I mean, this is why I'm so adamant about teaching the Bible as law, not as religion, but as law. Because if you have that foundational law under you, then you cannot fall for this agentic relationship. That's why it's so damn important to have it, because you'll never be in a position of authority. You'll always be in a position of wanting to help someone else, wanting to actually boost them up instead of kick them down. Right? Because it says never, you can't be wealthy unless all people are wealthy. Right? You're always trying to prop everyone else up and not yourself. And for me, for most people who actually have that as a natural, you know, that we just, it's just inherent in me, that makes me poor. That makes me, unviable, unenfranchised, unable to barely even support myself, because we're in a situation that's agentic, that people are in competition instead of its opposite, which is charity, right? We're in a situation where we cannot function unless we are in this agentic, conformist position. We can't function in society without our person, our mask.
But Clint, paying taxes is charity, because when I pay taxes, it goes to some single mom that has to raise 13 kids in the inner city. But actually, you know, that money that I pay out is the very money that would take me to survive and be completely independent. It's such a calculated parasitic relationship that, honest to God, they got it down to the penny. So, well, what I'm saying is if everybody was self-sufficient, then only when you came into hardship would that collaboration, that cooperation, that almost, you know, Amish barn-raising thing need to occur.
It's true. Now, well, we understand the psychological aspect of this, but, I mean, again, there's also this very real thing going on that you and I are adamant about. In fact, you know, I've had conversations with Daniel, for instance, where I'm trying to tell him, hey, don't be too frustrated if you can't get through to people. Some people will not ever hear any kind of message because their mind has been reset. Their epigenomic structure, their very purpose in life has been reset because of parasites. I firmly believe that. I firmly believe that there's a section of society out there that we call different various names, Jesuits, Jews, whatever, cannot be without some interference, without killing the parasite or finding it first and then killing it, that cannot be turned around, that cannot ever have a foundational law, because their intent and purpose has been altered. Just like any bug, any animal, any of the 80% of life that's parasitically inclined, and all of their victims out there. I don't think people really truly comprehend that most life is being driven by parasites out there.
So, because this is one of your favorites, and, you know, you and I have, like, you know, our top picks, but you, in one show, had brought up the spider.
The worm-weaving spider?
The worm-weaver that is, it's pretty much gutted. The bug is, like, the true definition of a zombie. It's not something resurrected from the dead, but it is an organism on its way to death that is still functional because the parasite has so taken it over, rewritten its nervous system, that it actually weaves a web specifically for the parasite. And that's what we're looking at in these human beings. And after that web is weaved, the parasite then gestates and comes out like the alien in the movie Alien. And what I'm trying to say is there was no hope for that bug. There's nothing in medicine, physics, or spirituality that could bring that spider back.
Well,
and here's why. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, otherwise, that spider is part of nature. It's doing as if you will. It's designed to do. It would spin beautiful, not so beautiful to flies and even birds, but it would spin these beautiful webs, these intricate designs that are again harmonious with the notion of its intent. Its intent is not good or bad. Its intent is to have a Sunday meal, right? And so it spins. It does this beautiful, intricate design. Likewise, as so many people have commented, we should always strive to speak in verse, to speak parabolically, to speak beautifully, if you will. We should always strive to do things that are in harmony with nature, not what we currently do. Not build, you know, concrete jungles, this kind of thing. But something's interfering. Something, whether it's figuratively through the agentic relationship or literally through the parasitic, literal, you know, bug in the brain kind of relationship, something is causing us not to be beautiful. Something is causing us to be very ugly and evil, for all intents and purposes, to be competitive, to love everything but our source, and that's a very, very frightening thing. And this is why I think we're so adamant that it's one thing to talk about the theory; it's another thing to say, "Well, is there a way to test this? Is there a way to actually come up with something that will say?" Because, like I said, that doctor said we have no way of testing for parasites, let alone microscopic ones.
Oh yeah.
Right, so what's the test, man? What is? I know we talk about psychopathy, right? Psychopaths and all that. Well, maybe they're not psychopaths. You know, I've seen evidence now that prions are the cause of schizophrenia. You know, I'm seeing all kinds of things that have to do with these parasitic things. So, you know, what, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine, because, you know, I wanted to share with the listeners, you and I have conversations for the past, like, 2 or 3 years, where we have, like, our little phrases that bring a smile, and one of it is the thing test. And you had brought that up to me, it's like, what are you talking about? Well, you know, the movie, The Thing, where they take, like, a power cord, and they'd stick it in a petri dish, and this, like, silly foam would just pop right out of it and show you that that culture was the alien.
Right.
So, according to Rebecca Carley, she goes, in a paraphrase, because, you know, we weren't all in on this conversation, but years ago she says, you don't need a test. You just look around, and if people are evil, you know that they're fucking infected, man. So let's look at what this compelling force is, because we have to understand our relationship to the biology, and then we can formulate an action against it. So
it's
coming close to a break.
Well, it's not such a foreign concept. I mean, these things plug in. I mean, literally, they're you know, it's kind of like we have receptors for pot and opium,
right. Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it's not at all strange in any way, especially when the CDC is telling us that at least 30% in America and 40% around the world have been infected with toxoplasmosis.
Which gets directly into the brain. Directly
yeah.
into the brain. So it's,
I mean,
like, how could it not influence you?
How can you not stop to think, well, okay, there's got to be more than one, and there certainly is. We've talked about rabies, right?
Yeah. So if we can, tell me if we're going to come up to a break, but I want to read Black Second, the definition of necessity, because this is the pivotal point for getting from the abstract to the biological. Necessity is controlling force. Good God, we just talked about that. If you got a fucking single-celled bug in your brain, who do you think's in control? I mean, yeast alone can make you crave food and you know, sugar, fat, carbohydrates, whatever, because that's what it wants, man. And if you don't feed it that, then it'll eat you, because it can switch from the carbohydrate fermenting form to the flesh eating form.
And because you're delicious.
Exactly. Thank you. Irresistible compulsion. Well, my God, you know, I just jumped from controlling force of the bug inside to it telling you what to do. Because necessity, when I read these words, necessity, you would think, oh, well, it was necessary, because there's a famous case where a man broke into a pharmacy to get a drug for his son because it was after hours and his son would die without it. And the judge said, you know, why did you do that? You broke the law. I'm going to put you in jail. He goes, it was necessary. The judge let him off. So people think that necessity is something that they can claim. But when you look at Black Sec and any legal, construct, they're always using this to their advantage. So that was one time when one guy got away with telling the truth and they gave him a pass. But this irresistible compulsion is, again, let's not look at it from the inside, let's look at it from the outside. There is an outside force compelling you to do something, a power or impulse so great that it admits no choice of conduct. And so you would say, okay, well, this guy that had to get the prescription for his son, he didn't have a choice, so he had to do it. Okay, that's internal. But let's look at it externally. They are imposing on you the stab in the back or the shot in the chest. It's your choice, but it's always, you know, you're going to die. There is no choice of conduct of what they do to us. When it is said that an act is done, quote, under necessity, it may be in law either of three kinds of necessity. Number one, the necessity of preserving one's own life, which will excuse a homicide. Two, the necessity of obedience. That's why I loved your experiment. As to the laws, or obedience to one, not sui juris, to his superiors. And here's the catch. If there were no flattering titles, then there is no fucking thing or person on the planet that is superior to me. And so if I accept that someone is, well, they're my manager out at work. Oh, well, he's the president. Oh, well, you know, he's a military guy with a weapon. There is no superior to me. There's only superior force, and who can get to it first? Number three, the necessity. The necessity causing or caused by the act of God or a stranger. And, you know, you gotta invoke Clint Richardson of, you know, God being defined as nature itself. So here we go. The necessity of weaving that, you know, crazy snot piece of web hanging from a single thread because there was a parasite in you that had gutted your nervous system and told you what to do. That's like the God. That is nature, maybe unnatural, of the parasite telling the insect what to do. But how is that different from the people? See, when you go into biology with no respect of persons, then you go, oh, that was just a spider and its parasite. Yeah, but you said like 30% of probably North Americans, probably 80% of the French, have toxoplasmosis. So you can't go, oh, well, you know, I'm an American, I don't have toxoplasmosis. Man, if you got cats and you don't change the litter box within 24 hours, you have toxoplasmosis and you didn't even need to eat red meat. I mean, like, you know, undercooked red meat. So this is how Black then breaks this down. A constraint upon the will whereby a person is urged to do that which his judgment disapproves, and which it is presumed his will, if left to itself, would reject. My God, Clint, that's the description of the entire premise of this show. We don't want to do what we do. If we had a choice, would we do the insane things that humanity has been blamed for, polluting its own planet, poisoning the oceans, poisoning the air, killing people? Would you really do that? Where the hell is that coming from if you wouldn't?
Well, I mean, and if you were a parasitic life form that enjoyed oxygen-free environment and, in other words, anaerobic, or aerobic, if you were a life form that had some semblance of planning or a purpose, would you drive people in an organized fashion, if you will, in a hive mind, to do exactly what people are doing today? How many science fiction movies have been written about this?
All of them.
Stories, I should say. Right, well, you take the science fiction element into it, it becomes really scary. I mean, it's very frightening. Then you start taking the religious or sect type of the Gnostics and the, what was the other group that talked about, the Gaia spore, the space eggs, the space parasites that came in from space and infected everybody. Gaia spore, which is the spore of the earth. You could bring biblical shit into. I mean, you can really go all out with. The point is, it explains our behavior, and I found as I'm looking into it, it's the only thing that explains our behavior. I don't think you can go far enough with this agentic thing to get to the point where people are doing such stupid shit. I just don't think, to destroy the environment, to destroy and keep it secret and keep... there's something, I don't know what to say. Because one of the most common questions I get whenever I'm trying to tell people something, and it's a question you just can't answer. There's, it's a great question, and it throws a fallacious curve into the conversation, and it's a great way to not have to think about it because you've just asked an unanswerable question, and that is... Well, if we didn't go to the moon, how come everybody keeps such secrets? Why don't the astronauts talk about it? What about all the people that worked on the space program? Why didn't they talk about it? And it's a perfectly reasonable question. So why isn't anybody talking about it? Why, what the hell are we supposed to think, well, how do you answer that question? Why is nobody talking about it?
Well, the next sentence, Clint, this is Black Second, the definition of necessity, and this was, a case, the citation was Wharton. It's either a case or a dissertation. A man, therefore, is excused for those actions which are done through unavoidable force and compulsion. And again, Clint, when you break this sentence down, you might think, okay, well, that applies to the guy that broke into the pharmacy. Nobody was hurt. It was just, property was injured. He stole the prescription, and he saved his son's life. So you can excuse him. And anybody with reason would say, yeah, that's reasonable. Of course, you would peel it back and go, well, they created the disease in his son, and they created a profitable prescription drug, so it was all fraud and flash in the pan anyway. But if you just use the premise that a guy acted out of compulsion to do something for a noble end, then that's excusable. But what we're looking at, because I always say turn it around, these law dictionaries weren't written for you, they're written for the controller. A man, therefore, is excused for those actions which are done through unavoidable force and compulsion. Well, everybody in NASA, all the astronauts, they were compelled either by their quote-unquote fictitious government or the bugs in their head to put on this pageant, this fraud, and therefore in their minds, because they were working within this hive agentur construct, their actions are forgivable. So why would they even talk about it? Because everybody was in on it, man. Then we go to, how do we resolve this, Clint? Because, you know, I don't like to talk about things the way they are and get everybody all depressed and not have an answer to it. Necessity. Homicide by. Homicide by necessity. You know, that's the way they write it in legal terms. A species of justifiable homicide because it arises from some unavoidable necessity without any will, intention, or desire, and without any inadvertence or negligence in the party killing, and therefore without any shadow of blame. I have a tapeworm. I take the remedy. I shit it out. As for instance, by virtue of such an office as obliges one in the execution of public justice to put a malefactor to death who has forfeited his life to the laws of his country. Well, okay, let's put all the legal shit aside because my world is biology. I'm an officer of my own body. I've got 70 trillion cells to organize and maintain. If I got a tapeworm, then I issue a warrant of death on the tapeworm, and I will carry out that law, that order, that decree, and I will kill that fucking tapeworm. But the law must require it, otherwise it is not justifiable. So let's look at the law. You're always saying, Clint, that God is nature. If nature is a thing, then what is this necessity? Let me go back because the necessity of preserving one's own life, which will excuse a homicide. So then here's the catch. Within nature, all things preserve their own lives, except we're seeing a rare phenomenon in human beings right now where they will capitulate to let an outside force kill it or bring it to a slow death, whether it's by vaccination or tasering of grannies. We must get back to self-preservation because that is nature. That is who we are. If we don't preserve ourselves, then we will become bug food. So then the question becomes, okay, then what do we kill? If it's not a tapeworm, is it other human beings? Because human beings are polluting the planet. They're killing other human beings. Are the human beings the problem? And should we kill them? But if it's a bug inside of the human, if it's that parasite that makes the human toxic to its own environment, isn't it our necessity to target and kill that infectious agent, whatever we're going to call it? I call it the Archon virus. Archon means controller or ruler, just like your New Testament quotes, the rulers of the Gentiles, the Archons of the Gentiles. So this is then, it's a morality question, it's a biology question. If we must kill, then people go, oh, well, you know, I couldn't kill another human being because that would make me just like the bad people. And that would be bad karma, and murder is bad. Well, necessity says, if there is a clear and present danger, fucking take it out, man.
And this gives me wonder. I really often wonder this at this point. You know, I talked about this. But by the way, what you're really saying is, in case of emergency, put your oxygen mask on first, and then assist others. Right? I've been wondering a lot lately after figuring out the puzzle, the mystery, the mistransliteration of the Bible, that it essentially amounts to purists, to the purity of nature, to the purity, the opposite of what we're talking about. In other words, a parasite-free existence, right?
Good love,
and that includes both the figurative and the physical.
Correct.
And by that I mean names, titles, monies, all the things that are parasitic by nature and by legal force, right? So it's so many different tools and so many different things. To live a pure life is literally to worship nature as source or God. You know, that's the way God is defined as nature. It makes it so much easier to understand that God is existence. It's not like a, you know, it's not the concept of a character or, you know, but you turn it into a character to tell a story. And God said this. Well, God doesn't have a voice, right? I mean, it's not like God has lips to speak. It's, it just doesn't work that way. And the Bible doesn't say that. It, of course, it uses allegory. It uses the notion of personification and anthropomorphization. Of course, because that's how stories are told. That's how the Indians did it. That's how every fucking culture does it. You have to. So knowing that, I'm very, very convinced at this point that when you see pictures of knights, for instance, Knights Templar or Monty Python's band, you know, with the Holy Grail, that kind of thing, that, what were they fighting? They were fighting the rabbit with teeth. They were fighting witches. They were fighting evil things, right? Evil things that don't belong as part of. They were literally purists going through and killing things that were not pure. And I'm really starting to think that that's what true Christianity is. I don't like the word Christianity because it's not in the Bible. No one ever told you to be a Christian, but the notion of being and remaining pure, free of marks and names and titles and all these and ailments and what to eat and what not to eat and which animals to, you know, there's something to be said that this is a purist movement and that those who truly, truly worship God are in fact worshiping nature, including all of man as the creation of God, if you will. Creation being a verb, happening now, happening in the future, happening all the time with every new baby, right? Every new life form and every death, that's part of creation, right? So it seems to me that what is going to happen is exactly what the science fiction novels tell us to, and I don't think people are going to really realize it. Unfortunately, I don't think people are going to comprehend that what they're really doing is becoming nature worshippers. In other words, people who value the source, value the original design, if you will, of things, and who want to kill, who want to destroy the power of men who might be parasitically influenced or just might be agentically influenced, whatever it is, who want to create a new world. A new world order, a new world law, a new world life force that will destroy, ultimately, the original design. Even though the original design is always going to come back, doesn't mean man's going to come back from his own, you know, idiocracy. So I really have this deep understanding and emotional response when I start thinking that truly the notion of what we call Christianity has been so thwarted into religion when in fact it's truly the law of nature. And when I say the law of nature, I don't think people understand what that means. It doesn't mean the law of nature, nature being what it is. It means the very nature of things, the source, the design, what causes life is the law of nature. Okay, it's not just some system of law that man made. No, it's a self-existent law. It is what drives life itself. And when we talk about the law of nature, we're talking about the best way for mankind to live in nature, including amongst himself and amongst every other possible creature or creature, right? That's what we're really talking about. And at some point, Patrick, at some point, that is going to kick in. I think. And there is going to be a separation of peoples. And there is going to be a true war, very similar to what the Bible talks about, which is the war between, you know, man and chimeras.
Oh, wow.
You could call it Skynet, you could call it robots, or you could call it what's happening now, the Clone Wars, for God's sake, right? Yeah. I mean, that's what I see happening right now. And I don't know if people are going to actually ever come to the realization that that's actually what's happening to them, that they're actually falling back to the natural law, the nature of law, the nature of life. They're actually protecting God. Literally, because God is existence in the proper form and substance and design, right? It all kind of melds together after a while once you realize that God is literally defined as nature or existence, all of existence, right? Something kicks in and you realize, my God, I got to protect this. We got to stop what's happening out there because it's destroying my ability to connect with my God, my nature, my life force, right? That is truly what I believe the notion of Christianity is supposed to be according to the Bible.
So you just described in biology terms the immune system.
Right.
So if the premise is Gaia, the Earth, is a living integrated organism, and we are, as Chief Seattle was purported to have made a speech about, we're all connected by that web, we're all part of that, then why would you shit in your kitchen sink? You know, you wouldn't do that. You would work in harmony with nature. You would support nature. And if something foul came into nature, as a white blood cell that could recognize self and non-self, you wouldn't go, oh, do I need a court order to go in there and blast it with an oxidative burst, kill it, and have the macrophages eat it up and shit it out? No, you would just go and fucking kill it. And that's why I brought up necessity. Now, you know, like you said, Clint, this could be figurative or it could be literal. It could be figurative. Let's kill the offices. Let's kill the flattering titles. If there is a clear and present danger where a human being pretending to have authority over you is going to put you at risk of harm or death, it says in necessity, it's excusable. Kill the motherfucker. Because part of the problem is people are afraid of karma. Oh, I couldn't possibly do that because it would affect my karma and I'd be as bad as they are.
Well, consider, kill it. Consider that for a moment. You know, the Bible says that we must become the sons of God. We must follow Christ's example and follow the law like Christ did, right? That's all it is, just an example of how to follow the law, right? So it says we must become sons of God. Well, what does that mean? Well, when you actually look up the word son, it means law. It means word. It means the word of God. We must become the law of God. What does that mean? Right?
It means that if you live on a planet, Clint, and it is your life support system, you have to protect that planet because you are the immune system. You are. Nobody's going to do it for you.
You're the fucking killer hunter cells. You're the T cells, man. You're the immune system. And we have been taught a law that is anti-Christ, anti-immunity, anti-life, anti-law. And I don't think people are going to grasp that until it's too fucking late. So I think you're right. I think we're saying the same thing here, that we gotta become the law. We gotta become the sheriff. We gotta become the police. We gotta be the macrophages, the cholesterol. We gotta be the good guys. But we're not, because we're not following the law. We're not saying, no, that is anti God, anti-nature. No, you can't do that. No, you can't make clones. Man is not supposed to create or recreate. Yeah. Right? I mean, at some point, that's going to kick in. At some point, that's got to kick in. And if it doesn't, then the only thing I can say is there must be some invisible thing that is preventing that awakening, and whether that's parasites or whether that's nanocomputers that they've, you know, same thing.
A power or impulse so great that it admits no choice or conduct.
Right, people right.
Being compelled to do this. So let's take a look at this, because you brought up the whole like genetic engineering thing. My pre-show notes were about sorcery. In sorcery, you use stones, herbs, and animals. Okay, let's just break this down. What's in a vaccine? Stones, because stones are elements. They're mineral elements. There's mercury in a vaccine. What are herbs? Well, I had to look up my own list in my first book, ICD-999. Peanut oil, for God's sakes. You know, how could an entire population develop allergy to peanuts if they didn't put peanut oil as an adjuvant in vaccines? There's also saponins, which is a soap component from plants, and soy peptones. They use it as a growth media. So we got stones and herbs and animals. The vaccines are grown in eggs, and they're fed baby cow blood. Okay, so how is this not sorcery? And back in the day, Clint, from the 1300s forward, all you had to do was whisper that somebody was a witch, and without any fucking evidence, they'd be popping people into the community ovens.
Right.
So here right. We got clear and present danger. I'm going to shoot this evil potion into your baby. And it's like, number one, why wouldn't you protect your baby from that with any force and means necessary?
Right.
And I'll tell you why. Because when you prevent your baby from being stung by that nurse or doctor, then the entire hive, CPS and the cops and goddamn military come out to protect what? What? You know, this is what we have to get to. The clear and present danger would be the nurse, the doctor, the police, the CPS, the government, and the, what the hell do you call it, the commander-in-chief, the president, because this entire system is that integrated. The president is an agency now since 1947, but it is the commander-in-chief of what? The military. So all these executive orders, the only way that the word order comes through is a military order. And so we are like completely immersed in the hive. And this is, Clint, this is the part where people have this cognitive dissonance, and they defer to that study that you said of just going, okay, the authority is too great. So let me break it down for you. If you're not going to kill literally human beings, then you got to realize that there is an entity, what I call the Archon virus, in these human beings that make them do all this evil. So if you don't want to kill your fellow human being, help me kill the goddamn bug. Because once the bug is gone, the spider won't weave a kooky web. The caterpillar won't be gutted on the inside and defend the grubs that have eaten it from any attack. And that was a quote in The Matrix. Morpheus and Neo are walking through the training program. And he said, you can't bring people out until they're ready. They're so inured in the system that they will defend it. We have to get the bug out first.
Well, it's kind of like a heroin addict on his deathbed defending his use of heroin. Right? I mean, it's horrible. By the way, folks, you're listening to UCY.TV to what is usually the Shaliak show, and I don't see Shali online, so I guess he's not going to join us, but that's okay. And because we're putting out disclaimers, I will say this. You mentioned earlier, you know, shitting in your sink. And so because of the legal constraints that we might have and the gender and human identity crisis that we're going through and the renaming, we better say that it's okay if you're a fecal-philiac, if you love the taste of shit. If you love the taste of shit, well, then you're excused and you have license to shit in your sink. and, you know, do whatever it is you're gonna do. We've gotta be loving and kind to all people, no matter what their malintent. And I do wanna say one other thing. You mentioned the word malefactor. You read it in a definition.
Okay.
So the malefactor is a bad guy. And what it actually means is mal, which is ill or a veil of evil, from the Latin malus. And strangely enough, and I don't think this is irony, I don't think it's accident, the word male, male, is the same as mal, mal. So male, the male of the species, is ill or veil, a veil of evil. Okay, it's also the word malady, like a disease. You know what a factor is, Patrick?
I'm waiting, man. I got my pen ready.
An agent.
Oh, good God.
In commerce, an agent employed by merchants residing in other places to buy and sell and to negotiate bills of exchange or to transact other business on their account, an agent or a substitute, or in arithmetic, it's a multiplier, which precedes the product. So, what was that definition you were reading? When they're going after the malefactor, what they're really saying is he who does not fit into this commercial system and who is not happy being an agent and paying tribute, that's a malefactor, a bad agent.
As for instance, by virtue
a rogue
of such,
agent.
By virtue of such an office as obliges one in the execution of public justice to put a malefactor to death,
yep,
who has forfeited his life to the laws of his country. And what is the laws of the country? What is the laws of God? To preserve. I work in concert with nature. My garden, Clint, used to feed me, produce like 2 years worth of food every season. And now I'm lucky to get like a half a year worth of food out of my ground because everybody around me, the hive, has conspired to poison the planet, literally poison the life support system. Now, what would happen if I said, okay, you're a malefactor, put you to death? The hive would rise up and destroy me. And that's what stops people from doing what I would consider the right thing. If you step on a dog's tail, even if it's your dog, it'll turn around and try to bite you. That's just action-reaction. We should be reactive like an immune system and stop the evil as it shows its head because it's so far gone now. These armies are so well equipped with people's tribute money that they're virtually unstoppable. How did the infection get that far out of control? Because nobody stomped the head of the serpent when they first saw it.
Yeah, and of course that was my original thing. Hey, all corporations are owned by governments. You know, all decisions they make come from government electing the board of directors through its proxy shareholder votes because it owns all the stock, or half the stock, you know, or a majority of the stock.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got literally corporations are just agents for government. And they do what government tells them because they exist because and only within government. Maybe you're just a shitty gardener.
That's right.
Right?
40 years of experience, yeah, diminishing returns, it's all about me. So, you know, what you describe was government. Well, what is government? Government is the people. Well, what are the people? It's a hive construct. So what else do we see in a hive? We see stinging insects. We see bacteria. We see viruses. And it's like, if you don't want to address this at the human level, if you're afraid of karma, if you're afraid of doing the wrong thing, and basically, Clint, people are afraid of death. We don't know what happens when we die, because if we did, and all this fucking shit was going down, and we knew that we were going to a better place when we died, we would open up a can of whoop-ass, and we would protect this planet, and people would rally with us.
I'll tell you what happens at death.
Okay. What?
You have It's really ugly. You have a major evacuation of the bowels and the bladder. In other words, you pee and piss yourself because you have no control anymore. Your body is septic, and you start rotting back into the fucking earth.
Right.
All right, that's what it says. Now, people say, well, no, the Bible says, no, the Bible doesn't say there's an afterlife. It doesn't say that you're going to die and go to heaven. It doesn't say that. It doesn't talk about an afterlife. It doesn't talk about it. No, it's talking about this fucking life. Why would you write a book in this life if it was only to affect the next life? It doesn't make sense, you idiots.
So we have to live in the now. That's very Zen. Only the present matters. So if the present is at threat, if there was a pipeline, so they protested. They protested. Who died? You know, probably the protesters died. How many of the people that are inducing the pipeline died? And, you know, we could talk about oil in another show. But
let's not forget the fact that it came out that Trump is a holder of the stock and is a major investor in the fucking pipeline.
And he reinstituted it. So with one executive order, it was shut down just to palliate the masses. Oh, we won. And then the next agent comes in and he reinstitutes it because that was the plan all along. And what does that do? The morality of those who fought against what they thought was right just gets destroyed to think, we're up against a power that we cannot resist. That's why it was calculated.
But
I'm saying there is a power that we can resist because it's a fucking microbe. If we get rid of the microbe, then there will be no government. There will be no hive. There will be no decisions on whether or not to put in a pipeline and whether or not it's going to leak into the water supply.
And the general rule is, has always been, it's probably changing now because people are stupider than ever. It is 3 years is a good amount of time. You come up with a bill. People discover it. They start acting out against it, start campaigning against it. Suddenly you have a global or a local or a national movement against some law that they want to pass, and they'll say, oh, okay, you win. 3 years later, everybody's celebrating their victory, and right under their fucking noses in some omnibus bill or something, like Obamacare, they'll put in that same law. It has nothing to do with healthcare. Most of the Obamacare bill doesn't have anything to do with healthcare. And it'll pass, and people won't even know it. And all those people who were so victorious and believed that they made a difference, all they really did was delay it and believe that they had a false victory. I don't think people quite understand that these things are going to pass no matter what you do. You can fucking, you can dance, do the dance of the Dakota Sioux Indian tribe. You can do the fucking, spiritual rain dance of the Sioux Indian tribe all you want around that fucking pipeline, and guess what? It's still gonna go in. Why? Well, the Indians are all agents. They cannot stop it unless they put back on their fucking hides, grab their bows and fucking arrows, and start killing the people who are trying to put it in. But that is the old law. They are now agents and absolutely pussified into being Americans. So nothing's going to happen. Just like you said, they're going to say, okay, you win. They all go home, then all of a sudden they're going to start building again, right? It's fucking easy. It's easy to beat these people. Why? Because they don't have bows and arrows anymore. They're all in museums. This is what we used to be. This is the proud fucking barbarian people we used to be. No one could get past us. Even the innocent fucking pioneers that tried to go through our lands, we would kill. Because we know they're the white man. They're gonna fuck everything up. They're going to put all this civilization in. We don't want it. That's the people we used to be. You see, but now we're completely defeated under military rule on lands that are owned by Congress that we're told are ours, but really they're just prison camps. And they try to tell us we're in a prison camp, but we don't listen. Right? They're has-beens. And you know what? We are has-beens. We, as militias, are has-been. We now are pensioners and military, you know, retirees. And we are so much like Israelis who, you know, Zionists who their country can do no wrong. No matter how much wrong it does, it can do no wrong. Well, America can do no wrong. Why? Because I'm its factor. I'm its agent. I'm getting my hand fucking fed by that piece of shit. It's just horrible when you think about it. You know what? Pensioner. You know, I love this because this describes most of the people in America. They're stuck. They're stuck in the money system. And because of that, like you said, they will defend the most evil fucking shit ever. They will defend the fact that all their money is going into a pension, a public pension fund that is being invested in Monsanto, Raytheon, General Electric, and all the other war fucking companies out there. They don't care as long as they get their fucking money. Samuel Johnson in his 1755 dictionary, loved it, great guy, wonderful, wonderful stuff. Pension is an allowance made to anyone without an equivalent. In England, it is generally understood to mean that a pension is pay given to a state hireling for treason to his country.
Oh, wow.
Pensioner is one who is supported in Black's Fourth, one who is supported by an allowance at the will of another, a dependent. What does that mean? It means you're on fucking welfare, you idiots. And you know what? It's almost entirely taxpayer money that goes to pay your pension. Now I contribute to my pension fund. No, you idiot. They created pension funds to rob the public of taxation so they could invest it in all these fucking corporations. It is usually applied in a public sense to those who receive pensions or annuities from government, who are chiefly such as have retired from places of honor and emolument. Gifts. Persons making periodical payments are sometimes so called. And guess what? The head of one of the inns of court, otherwise known as the treasurer, is also a pensioner. Pensio in the Latin is a payment properly for the use of a thing, a rent, a payment for the use and occupation of another's house. You're being used, people, and you're being paid a slave fucking wage to retire and just go the fuck away and pretend that everything's just peachy.
So let's bring this into farming. Farming is subsidized. That's tax money. So everything that I experience out here, my inability to live, to feed myself, to be in harmony with the land, is done through the force of taxation that is paid to these agents. I call them farm whores, PHARMWHORES, farm whores. They're being paid to poison the very life support system of the planet, and they do it because it's a program, because it's easy, because they are pensioners. They're getting paid to do the wrong thing, and therefore, because it makes their life easy and my life hell, they will not stop. And this is physics. A thing will remain in motion until it's met by an opposing force. So all that we can say, Clint, in abstract or reality, just becomes so many pretty words until people say, hey, you know what? Those Indians were right. I think I'll stand with them. I think I will bring my bow and arrow. Or, you know, like a militia, keep your powder dry and your pantry stocked. You know, what the fuck have they done other than that?
Well, you got to think of it this way, too. When Johnson says that it's pay, a pension is pay given to a state hireling for treason against his country, What's the difference there? A state hireling. The state is the district, the federal government, basically. And the country is the territory, the land, the people.
The land.
Right? I mean, you're committing treason against all of us, you pensioners. And I'm sorry, but these are true statements. I'm not worried about harming your feelings. I'm worried about the fact that you don't give a shit because you're getting paid. As long as you're getting paid, everything's just peachy dory. Now, but here's what you have to understand. Now, this is out of Black's Fourth, sorry. A stated allowance. What is a pension? A stated allowance out of the public treasury granted by government to an individual or to his representatives for his valuable services to the country or in compensation for loss or damage sustained by him in the public service. Pensions are in the nature of bounties of the government.
Oh,
who gets a bounty? You know, they give bounties to soldiers. They want you to fucking kill or come back for a second round in Iraq. So they give you a bounty. They give you a reward. This is our bounty of government, which government has the right to give, withhold, distribute, or recall at its discretion.
It's
defined as a rent. They're renting you.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Mercenary talk.
Yeah.
An annual payment made by each member of the Inns of Court. So the attorneys actually have to pay. So I can't stress this enough, though, and I tried to warn people years now that your contributions to pension fund are no longer your monies. As soon as that pension fund or that state goes out of business, as soon as the United States declares bankruptcy or any state or any county or any city that you're involved in with these pension funds, they have the right to give, withhold, distribute, or recall that at its discretion. You are on a bus, and as long as that bus is full of gas, full of artifice, full of belief, and full of peace, which is good commerce, then you're great. As long as these corporations are allowed to expand and kill the fucking world, you're great, because that's what you're invested in. You're invested in all the banks, all the foreign banks, all the foreign corporations. That's what you're invested in. You are the reason that these things exist. You are the reason that globalism happened. Okay? That is pensions. But I really want you to understand that at any time, your little payoff, your little treasonous, reward that comes to you every month while people are starving and while you're complaining about actual charity to the poor, which is hardly anything compared to what the taxpayers pay in the billions for fucking pensions. Guess what? That can end at any time because they don't give a shit about you. You're no different than any fucking soldier out there who is not being taken care of by their government, who is not being taken care of by that shitty system of healthcare that's set up for soldiers. I'm sorry, you're no different than them. As soon as they're ready to drop you like a fucking hotcake, they will. You are not secure. You are not safe. You have no protection. You are criminals masquerading as heroes. And because of that, you have no guarantees. You have no insurance. You have nothing. And I'm sorry, that is the harsh truth. And it will happen. It's already happening. Cities are declaring a bankruptcy because they're corporations. It's happening, and it's going to happen. And man, when it happens, you're going to be in the exact place, the exact fucking place that all those poor people that you complain about are. That's where you're going to be. And you know what? I'm going to sit back and I'm going to laugh. I'm going to have a beer, like you say, Patrick. I'm going to get my freaking my lounge chair out, watch the chaos, watch the madness, because these people actually believe they've done the right thing. Oh, I've sold my soul and I'm getting a payment from the devil, and I've done the right thing. You haven't done the right thing. You are part of the problem. Now, you can argue with me on that if you want, but good luck.
Okay, so let's take a look at it. What I do is I struggle. Even within nature, it is a jihad. which means struggle. So in a cold year, I get a lot of peas and very few beans. In a warm year, I get very few peas, but a lot of beans. So nature has this balance. So I roll with the changes. But right now, these pensioners, these things called farm whores, have so destroyed the planet that I can't even be guaranteed that if I put a seed in the ground, that 30% of the seeds will come up. Okay? So what I'm looking at is when I was working with nature, I've got variable but sustainable, I hate to use words like that, green and sustainable payback for my efforts. But people don't want the effort. They just want what Esau required of his brother. Esau came into the tent, is completely exhausted after hunting and killing Nimrod, and he says, I need a bowl of porridge. And Jacob, being the Jew that he was, he says, give me your birthright and I'll give you a bowl of porridge. He goes, okay. So for the sake of ease, people have given up their birthright. People should be living on their own plot of ground, growing their own food. But where are they? They're in mousetraps called cities, and when they lose their pension, how are you going to eat? So they traded ease for what I do. Every year, Clint, I'm going to have to go out there, get dirt under my fingernails, and make my own living.
I have to build every you a year. Bubble.
Oh, I need a glass dome. I'll build my own, like, flat earth model. I'll build a dome above my garden.
That's my monastery model, is a big glass dome.
Cool. And so, you know, Clint, what is the solutions to this? Well, you know, we've got to stop the bugs. We've got to reclaim the land. Because, you know, why do we say government owns the land and by necessity only parcels it out as a mortgage to those that think they hold it? Well, that's only because of force. The government says it's ours. The government came in and it massacred the Native American population, took the land and patented it, and a patent is an invention. So this is all black magic's flash in the pan illusion. We need land. And that was your premise when you're talking about monasteries and basically coming out of the system. You need standing, and that's a legal term. When you come off the ship of Congress of commerce, you need solid ground to stand on, and we don't have that. So these are the starting points. We need land that is ours, that is not taxed, where we can grow and not be molested from outside.
Well, and even the notion of not being taxed is a patriot mythology. You're going to pay a tax. The question is, are you paying a private tax that is specifically there to protect your land holdings? Because trust me, all of these landholders, they do pay a tax. The constitutions of the states and the Constitution of the United States is very clear that you will be taxed as a landholder. The difference is you're not paying public taxes. You're not paying for all of these different pensions and property taxes and that sort of thing that goes to, you know, public schooling. No, you're paying directly to the state. You're not paying the federal government, you're paying the state, right? And the state thus protects your rights as a private landholder. It does not protect any of us. In fact, its armies are there to protect the landholders against us. We're the domestics. We're like freaking maids and shit. We're domestics. We're that, you know, read the Constitution, folks, and then read the definition of a domestic. You're going to find out that the United States is protecting the landholders, the people, from all threats, foreign and domestic. Well, what the hell is a domestic threat? It's the entirety of the public population, the United States citizenships. Right? I mean, wake up! Wake the fuck
up! Because those domestics, if they claim, because a right, according to the Protocols of Zion, rights are that which is taken by force. So if the people took back the land, and you don't have to be greedy, this is what you're talking about, cooperation and charity and just taking what you need. If they took back the land, then those landholders would be under threat by domestic terrorism. That's what they consider us since, what was it, 33, when the banks called the quote-unquote citizens enemies of the state, Trading with the Enemy Act.
Yeah, essentially alien enemies and alien friends.
Alien enemies, yep. And so, you know, this is what I'm saying, Clint. There was a declared war. There were undeclared wars. We're at war. And so what do you do in war? Do you just lay down and say, okay, let the tapeworms eat me?
Well, yeah, or, so this goes back to the, oh, the Constitution protects me. Oh, I'm a citizen, therefore I have rights. No. A state of emergency is equal to a state of war, and the law of necessity means that there is no law. Okay, so you cannot sit there and go, you're not going to stand in front of the fucking tank, the fucking army, and say,
excuse me, gentlemen, but I'm a citizen of the United States, and I have rights.
Oh, what do you think is going to happen? Well, I mean, this is the ridiculousness of the agentic mentality that we've been put into.
No, I'm special. I'm from the United States. I have rights,
right? I mean, that's like a slave telling his master he's not going to pick cotton for the day.
Rights are that which is taken by force. So if you are not imposing your rights outside of yourself, then you merely have privileges. And then in a state of war, the Constitution is suspended.
Well, so what they'll call you is an insurgent. And
which
we're
is
taught,
proper. Yeah.
We're taught that insurgents are bad. We go over, we step into someone's territory in sovereign country, we start shooting up the residents of that country, and we call them insurgents. Oh, they're so bad, those insurgents. Well, let me tell you what an insurgent is. It actually comes from the Latin insurgent, in insurgo, and it means to rise.
Oh, wow.
In opposition to lawful civil or political authority. A person who rises in opposition to civil or political authority, one who openly and actively resists the execution of laws. Well, who's the executioner of laws? Well, that's the executive office, the sheriff, the president, etc., the governor. Also see insurrection. An insurgent differs. Now, this is where it's important, you see. An insurgent differs from a rebel. The insurgent opposes the execution of a particular law or laws. The rebel attempts to overthrow or change the government. All right, so we're all sitting here going, no, we don't want a pipeline. But we're not rebels. We're not trying to overthrow the government because it's putting in a pipeline. We're insurgents, you see. And insurgents, you know, they can be flicked away like fleas. The rebel attempts to overthrow or change the government, or he revolts and attempts to place his country under another jurisdiction. All rebels are insurgents, but all insurgents are not rebels.
Interesting.
So think about that next time you say, well, we got to go kill the Muslims. We got to go into Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iran, and we got to kill all those insurgents. Who are the insurgents? They're the people that are saying, why the fuck are you in my country? I'm going to fight you tooth and nail because you're a rebel trying to overthrow or change our government. See, we're the bad guys. And that's
immune
what people
system. Feel. It's just an immune system response. They're not us. Get rid of it. It's always biology, Clint. And so what we're talking about is the hive has induced people to cooperate towards its ends, this compelling force. It's working towards a program, and it's been pretty damn successful at it. So what needs to happen then is if human beings are cooperative animals, then why aren't we cooperating towards, and I don't even have words because you took peace away from us, you know, towards tranquility and harmony and balance and working with nature. Why aren't there cooperatives?
Peace,
doing
peace,
that?
peace is the opposite of war. War happens when commerce comes to a halt. They need to,
right?
So what is peace but good commerce or open commerce? Well, what if you change commerce into charity, open charity?
Okay.
Suddenly,
okay.
How do you block that up, right? Well, with money. But, that's true peace. Now, the peace they talk about is legal peace, which is completely different. It's always the opposite of the true meaning of the word. We're at the end, folks. Thanks for joining us today. Shelly will be back next week. Take care. Try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list. That's retarded babble. Protesters make you Hitler as soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary. For the corporation, sell them weapons.